Look now at Substitutes for Bread. This was published by Gilray on Christmas Eve, 1795. Five men sit round a table, gorging themselves on substitutes for bread. Fish is prominent, but so is drink, and two massive sides of beef are being brought in. The men at the table are, from right to left, William Pitt, the Prime Minister, seated on a padlocked treasury, Pepper Arden, the Master of the Rolls, Henry Dundas, Secretary of War, Lord Grenville, Foreign Secretary, and Lord Loughborough, the Lord Chancellor. Through the window can be seen a crowd carrying banners, "Grant us the crumbs from your table," and "Petition from the starving swine," a reference to Burke's dismissal of the bulk of the population as the swinish multitude. Bread was the staple of the poor's diet in the 18th century. A disastrous harvest in 1794 had brought shortages and high prices. The war made matters worse by impeding imports and disrupting the usual internal movement of grain to feed enormous military encampments on the coast awaiting a French invasion. The situation had caused rioting. The government responded by urging people to find substitutes for bread. On a rather different tack, national fast days were held. The fast was seen as a sign of atonement, and churchmen offered prayers on these days to win the war. Gilray linked the fast days and the famine, and visually expressed the cynical assumption that members of the government were doing very well in finding substitutes for bread. Not long before Gilray published this cartoon, the state opening of Parliament had witnessed serious disorder. Crowds had jeered at George III's carriage to and from Parliament. They chanted for peace and bread. A stone had broken the carriage window on the way to Parliament. Someone had tried to drag the King from the carriage on the way back. The disorder followed hard on the heels of a mass meeting of radicals in London that addressed the nation, remonstrated with the King, and called for peace and reform.
"We remain fully convinced that the permanent peace, welfare and happiness of this country can only be established by restoring to our fellow countrymen their natural and undoubted rights, universal suffrage and annual parliaments. We believe the period is not far distant when Britons must no longer depend upon any party of men for the recovery of their liberties. The only hope of the people is themselves."
The government responded to the mass meeting and the attack on the King with two new legislative proposals. The first bill made actions against the King's person or the persons of his heirs capital offences. It also extended the law of treason to include incitement to hatred of the King, of his heirs, of his government or the Constitution. The second bill restricted public meetings to 50 persons, unless a magistrate had given previous permission. It also gave magistrates wide powers to supervise public lecture rooms and public lecturers. Moderate, liberal reformers united with radicals to oppose the bills through meetings and petitions, but their campaign was a failure. The so-called gagging acts received royal assent a week before Gilray's substitutes for bread. A string of Gilray's contemporaries responded to the new bills with the image of John Bull gagged. Thomas Spence, a former schoolmaster from Newcastle, who ran a small radical printing and publishing shop in London during the 1790s, responded with the next print: "A free-born Englishman, the admiration of the world, the envy of surrounding nations, etc., etc." It speaks for itself. Moderate liberal reformers continued to deplore the new legislation. Some of the radicals appear to have given up politics when the bills passed, while others plunged into the twilight world of conspiracy. It's difficult for governments, and difficult for subsequent historians, to estimate the seriousness of underground conspiratorial groups. Much of the evidence comes from spies. And are those spies telling the truth? Are they stating what they think governments want to hear? Are they emphasizing dangers to keep themselves in employment? Manifestly, in Britain during the 1790s, there were self-taught artisans and journeymen with interests in politics and who considered that the political and constitutional structure were in need of major reform. Some were prepared for violence. Lack of success in the war and the serious food shortages prompted much discontent. But did this all add up to the potential for insurrection and revolution?